When I was in high school, a wise man once taught me a valuable lesson. He said, do tomorrow. That was the lesson that I held on to for the 2 years of my IB program. Fortunately, I graduated without any consequences. Unfortunately, I graduated without any consequences. Fast forward a couple of years to 2016. It was my last course of my bachelor's degree at UBC. This last course was jazz arranging. Now, to complete the course, there's only one requirement, which is a final project, and in which you have to finish an 8 to 10 minute piece of music for a professional jazz band orchestra, 17 instruments. Here's the catch. Everything has to be written out by hand on a piece of paper. In case you need a reference, because not everybody is a musician, for 8 to 10 minutes piece of music for a 17-piece jazz band, that is 120 pages of music. So a couple of students naturally will have asked the instructor, this is 2016, we have computers, why do we need to write this stuff by hand? Our instructor, he's a little strict, definitely a little old-fashioned. He says, computer is the lazy way. You learn bad habits. Writing it by hand is the best way to learn. And the instructor made it very clear. He says, we are to finish our piece by Tuesday, April 12, 2016, 7:30 p.m. And at that time, we are to bring our scores to the concert hall, and a live jazz orchestra will play our piece there. If we are able to have a complete performance, we're going to pass it. If we don't, we'll fail. There is absolutely no exceptions. Throughout the course, I really enjoyed it. I found myself getting the concepts and the theory and stuff pretty well. So naturally, I was pretty confident that I could finish the project. Time flies. It was April 8th, Friday, 5 days before the deadline. I basically have all the ideas written out on a draft, and I was planning to spend the weekend copying out to the score. And I thought to myself, it is just copying. How hard can that be? Due tomorrow. It has never failed me once. So I slept that night on Friday. I woke up to work on Saturday, and I started working on it after work on Saturday. But what I didn't realize as I started copying was a bunch of writing still needed to be made. I just have a draft. It was just a bunch of ideas and concepts. I have a lot of decisions I have to make at that point. And so I proceeded to spend Sunday, entire day after church. I pulled an all-nighter at the church office. Monday, I went to work at church, another all-nighter at the church office. Tuesday, I spent the whole day writing and copying until 7:29 p.m. I was at the entrance to the UBC concert hall. And in my hand was this, 120 pages of music, all written out by hand. As I opened the wooden doors to the concert hall, I was sweating a little bit. I was nervous. I saw on stage the 17 musicians on stage tuning, and my instructor was on stage waiting for all the students to hand in their assignment. I walked down the stairs, and I thought about all the wonderful conversation I had with the instructor. I really enjoyed the class. I looked at him straight in the eye as I got to the edge of the stair. I knew he had high expectation for my work, and I knew that he was very strict. So I told him at the edge of the stairs, I said, I'm so sorry I couldn't make it. I was about 5 parts short of completing the score. The instructor, without changing any facial expression, he stared at me and he said, go sit at the back of the concert hall. And I was saying that phrase, I genuinely had a tear in my eye. Not just because I couldn't finish and perhaps couldn't pass the course, but because I really enjoyed what I was doing. I cared about it. And I felt like I let him down. And so even still to today, I kept my scores. And I don't think I would ever throw them away. Because it's a reminder of one of the most enjoyable times that I've had in university. And honestly, it's still a little bit of a reminder of a lesson that I had. A little regret that I had. Of a time when I should have known. I should have been smarter and wiser. But instead of that, I was like a fool. I was a little dumb. What was the foolish part of the story? Was it because I didn't get the concepts of the class? Was it because even that I didn't treat it seriously? Not really. I was foolish because I knew I had a final project on which my entire grade is dependent on, and I really cared about. But I didn't do anything about it until the last minute. I thought I could do it tomorrow. Have you had an experience like that? There's something that you know will happen or something that you have to do, but you didn't prepare for it. You waited for tomorrow and then tomorrow and then tomorrow, and then there was a severe consequence because of it. If you think about it, it's kind of foolish to live that way, is it not? You see, in the Bible, there's a teaching that Jesus made that illustrates a very similar point, but it's about a much more serious issue than just a jazz band arrangement. Matthew chapter 25. Jesus says, then the kingdom of heaven will be like the 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 of them were wise. So first of all, what is Jesus talking about? What is then the kingdom of heaven? What is he talking about? In the context of the passage, Jesus is talking about his return. When Jesus returns, there is going to be a judgment for all the people. Then a new heaven and new earth. So at that time, when Jesus returns, this is what Jesus is talking about. Then it will be like 10 virgins. Or you can imagine as sisters or bridesmaids for a bride who is about to get married. They're waiting for the groom to come to pick up the bride. And they, as the sisters, have one last thing to do, which is to take the lamps, light them, and wait for the groom. Now, how are these 5 bridesmaids, how are they, some of them wise, and how are some of them foolish? Why were they wise or foolish? For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. At this time, you need oil to light your lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, presumably because he was confirming the details of the marriage with the bride's family, they all became drowsy and slept. Then all of a sudden at midnight, there was a cry, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. The groom was probably at the village entrance, and all the bridesmaids rose and got their lamps ready. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, there is not going to be enough for us and for you. Go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. And while they were going to buy, the groom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other bridesmaids came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. And the result was completely unexpected, a little strict, a little harsh, perhaps. The master said, or the groom said, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Why were the bridesmaids or the virgins foolish? They were foolish because they knew the groom would return soon, but they did not prepare. In fact, they waited and waited until the last minute. They thought they could do it tomorrow, but it was too late. In the same discourse, Jesus gave a similar teaching about his coming and what we are expected to do when he returns. Jesus says, Matthew chapter 24, who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is our servant, whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. Before Jesus returns, he says, right now, we're all entrusted with some things, some possessions, some wealth, health maybe, talents, skill, time, relationships. And if we are prepared, as in we're faithfully managing what Jesus has given us, then we'll be blessed. But on the other hand, if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks and gets drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. If at any point in time we think that the master won't come back, because it seems like it's been a while, it seems like it's been a long time, and we start to live in a way as if these things are ours, as if we are the master, and we procrastinate, we wait, we waste everything away. And when the master comes back sooner than what we expect, there will be much regret. In Luke's account of the same teaching, he spells out an important principle for all of us, and we should really take this to heart. He says, he spells out when Jesus returns, how is he going to settle accounts with us? Luke says, everyone to whom much was given in this life, of him much will be required. And from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more. This is a principle that all of us must remember and hold on to and live out. To whom much was given and entrusted, the expectation for us is higher. Now the question at this point naturally is, a lot of us will ask, well, how do I know I'm considered, you know, much? I have a lot. I don't feel like I have much. I feel like I only have very little. So tonight, let me settle that question once and for all. Let me spell out exactly for you the definition of what much means. First of all, if you have a secondary level education or higher, or you have a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a couple of degrees, or some professional certification, accountant, doctor, nurse, healthcare professional, trades, you have a lot more than a lot of other people. Did you know that? Secondly, if you have a net positive financial status, as in your income is greater than your expenses, you have savings, you can afford to go to vacation once, twice, three times a year, you have a car, you're paying mortgage for your house, you have a job, you have a lot more than a lot of people. Did you know that? Number three, if you have some areas of expertise or skills, like art, like music, coding, computer, sports, you have been given much. Number four, if you have a supportive and a loving family, you go home and there's a home-cooked meal for you. You have a place to live in. You can sleep in your comfortable bed. You have been given so much. Number five, if you wake up every day healthy, you don't have to worry about whether you'll make it tomorrow. If you have youth, if you have time, you have a lot more than the rest of the world. Number six, if you, this is something we take for granted all the time. If we have freedom of speech, if you live in a place where you can express your opinion and you can do what you set out to do without consequences, you live in a free world, you have a lot. And finally, number seven, if you have received the gospel, you have Jesus, you have the Spirit with you, you have hope for tomorrow, you have a loving church community that walks with you, you are rich. If you look at all seven of these and you check every single one of them, I want to tell you, you are one of the richest people in this world. But if you're like, I don't have seven, I have five, I have four, I have three, or even just one, you're still part of the small percentage of people in this world that have a lot more than the rest of them. I hope you can see that when Jesus says, everyone to whom much was given, much will be required, he's talking to you. He's talking to me. He's talking to us. And he's saying this list of stuff, this is not yours. It's entrusted to you. And when he returns, he will settle accounts with you. He will see what you have done with what he has given you. And so for today, if we know this and we don't prepare and we wait, then we are a fool, are we not? Because this would be the only thing, single thing, that you can do in this life that will have eternal consequences for your next life. So that sounds scary and all. If that's the ending of the fools, what about those for the wise? About those who live wisely? What is the reward for those who live wisely? Jesus says this in Luke chapter 19, a very similar teaching to the one that we've just read. Chapter 19, Jesus says, a nobleman, a royal family member, went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and then return. And so as he left, he called 10 of his servants. He gave them 10 minas, which is around 3 months of wage, and said to them, engage in business until I come. Now, what's interesting is that the master didn't specify how to use the money, what business to do, what his expected return should be, and most importantly, he didn't tell us when he's going to come back. Just engage in business until I return. And when he returned, having received the kingdom, he ordered the servants to whom he had given money to be called to him, that he might know what they had gained by doing business. Settle accounts. The first came to him saying, Lord, your mina has made 10 more, 10 times. And he said, the master said to him, well done, good servant, because you have been faithful in very little. You shall have authority over 10 cities. 10 cities. 10. Think about it. The master gave 3 months of investment and it made 10 times. So if you just do a little math, say it's $20,000, and it made $200,000. That is a great return. But the reward for making $200,000 is 10 cities. That doesn't make any sense. The reward is not proportional. It's beyond imagination. It doesn't make any sense. Similarly, the second one came, saying, Lord, your mina has made 5 minas. And the master said to him, you are to be over 5 cities. Again, same thing. 5 times the money, but a disproportionately great reward of 5 cities. And then you realize what the master is doing. It's intentional because he knows he has a kingdom that he will inherit, he will receive. And when you have a kingdom, you need people to help you manage the kingdom. So, before he gets the kingdom, he gives all of his servants a test to see not just who has the ability, but who has the faithfulness, who actually listens and does what he tells them to do. To those who are faithful, he will give them greater responsibilities. Then another servant came, saying, Lord, here's your mina, which I kept laid away in a handkerchief. For I was afraid of you, because you are a severe man. You take what you do not deposit and reap what you do not sow. And the master said to him, I will condemn you with your own words, you wicked servant. You knew that I was a severe man, taking what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money even in the bank, so that at my coming I might have collected it with interest? The last one is a fool. He's a wicked servant. The problem is that he's not faithful. He's not trustworthy. He doesn't believe his master will get the kingdom. He doesn't believe in him. So he just wasted his time away. And the master said to those who stood by, take the mina from him and give it to the one who already has 10. And all the servants said to him, Lord, he already has 10 and you have given him 10 cities and you're giving the one to him now. And Jesus now gives the second principle of how he will settle account with us. He says, I tell you that to everyone who has, who's faithful in this life, more will be given in the next. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. See what Jesus is saying with this parable. He says when he returns, we don't stop working. We don't retire. When Jesus returns, we are rewarded with more work, more responsibilities. And just before you go, no, I don't want to be a CEO. I don't want to manage a city. I don't want to be a mayor or a governor. The point is not a management of a place or a business. The point is that the responsibilities will be far beyond what you can imagine. The point is that it's not just a reward. It's reigning with him. Think about it. Reigning with God over the new heaven and new earth, where everything works as intended. No evil, no sin, productive, fruitful, joyful, harmonious work. You get to reign over it. To the one who has, more will be given. And so in summary, there are two principles of how Jesus set all accounts with us. These two principles work together. They're complementary with each other. The first is, everyone to whom much was given, much will be required. And that's for all of us who have much entrusted to us in this life. Jesus requires us to be faithful with it and to invest with it. Then the second principle, to everyone who has been faithful, to everyone who has, more will be given to us when Jesus returns, outside of what we can imagine. So for us here today, would you go back to that list? Could you do yourself a favor and copy this down in your notebook? Take a picture or something. Open it up tonight and seriously ask yourself a few questions. How many of these boxes have you checked? How much has God entrusted to you? If you have checked the box, why don't you spell it out? What has God given you in that category? Go ahead and do that tonight. Second question, how much of these are you actually faithfully investing, doing business with, and using them for God? The third question is, how much of these have you taken for granted, thinking it's all yours? In other words, how much of these have you hidden away in a handkerchief somewhere? How much of these are you using just to prepare for now, but not for the future? Or another way to put it is, how much of these are you using just to bless yourself, and how much of these are you using to bless other people? And after you've seriously thought about all this, then ask yourself, well, how do I need to change today so that I'll be rewarded tomorrow? In 2019, one of our staffs heard this message. Well, let's not play the video just yet. Could we go back, please? Oh, you know who the staff is. Pastor Fizz heard this message in one of our church retreats, and her whole life trajectory changed. At that time, she was serving and working a little bit of hours in the church and some hours in a dental clinic while studying at the same time. She was contemplating at that time what God is calling her to do. Should she go into full-time ministry or continue in the healthcare clinic? And she was already accepted to do a certificate program as a dental hygienist. The struggle that she had was, while church pays the bills, dental hygiene pays a bigger bill. The struggle that she had was, church doesn't seem like a proper job, whereas dental hygienist is a professional career. But the struggle that she had was, church is what she felt God called her to do, while healthcare or dentistry is what others say she should do. Church is a place where she felt like she can best use what God has gifted her, while dentistry would be burying some of her gifts that God has given her. As she was thinking about all these things, she went to a church retreat in November of that year, and she felt God speaking to her. And as you can tell, we have a recording of that final reflection of from her retreat. And it's in Cantonese, but we have put captions on it. And I've asked for her permission to show that video today. So let's watch that video now.
第一樣嘢，我其實我都寫咗好多嘢嘅，但係我覺得成個session呢幾日裏邊啦，即係經過成個禮拜裏邊咧，for me有一樣嘢 first struck me 嘅就係 when you grow you must have experience. 咁我其實唔係 experience 嘅，但係咧我唔係好識寫嗰個中文字，咁所以其實係試驗呢兩個字。咁 當你要 grow 嘅時候，你要有試驗，你會被試驗，你要有 destruction。 咁之後去到 camp 嘅時候咧，我話 destruction 點 destruct 法啊？你又要 科幾多啊？究竟幾多先係盡啊？咁樣。咁去到 camp 嘅時候咧，仲用埋個死字添，你要死。我真係有個 feeling 就係要點樣死法咧？我好驚死喎。咁但係。 即係當然驚死啦！我而家得25歲，咁我好驚死。但係當我去 reflect 翻嘅時候，有一句我寫低咗嘅：我好驚死，但我更加驚交唔到帳。我更加驚，我面對神嘅時候，唔知同你講啲乜嘢，我會覺得好 guilty。咁我再寫嘅就係人生真係好短嘅，其實。如果突然間翻咗天家。 我點樣面對呢一生？呢一個係我同佢講嘅嘢嚟嘅。咁係一個好好嘅提醒，因為我呢一刻似乎好多時間，但其實時間真係唔係好多。有一日唔知發生啲咩事，我突然間見到神嘅時候，我會好驚，我面對唔到你，我交唔到我盤數出嚟，我 I don't know what I did with my life，所以。 At the end， 我寫咗嘅就係你唔好驚去 walk out。點解你唔去 walk out？神想我去 let go of 一啲嘢。咁所以最後我寫嘅就係 God， I believe in you， I trust in you， 我願意去相信你，請你幫助我嘅小信。阿飛，唔好走住。我覺得神真係好祝福你啊，因為。
Imagine 25歲嘅人就已經開始咁樣諗呢個人嘅生命可以點？咁我覺得大家就見證啦。OK， 你見證上帝會點啊？冇人講得到嘅。一個25歲嘅人有咁，我唔知有幾多時間啦。但係佢一定係早過我。我25歲喺度十下十下咁樣樣。但係佢25歲講到呢啲嘢。咁我諗。
I'm so glad that we have that on recording. When I watched that video, a couple of things stood out to me. Fitz said she doesn't want to go to God empty-handed. She doesn't want to waste her life because if she sees God, she wouldn't know how to face Him. The first thing that really stood out to me was I really admire how seriously she takes what Jesus says. We are supposed to have some level of urgency and even, can I say, some level of fear, a healthy kind of fear, when we're thinking about the day when we see God. She also says, I don't know how much time I have. That is the attitude that I think perhaps all of us should have. Live as if today, live today as if tomorrow you're going to see God. I admire her for that. But not only just talking about it, she actually did it. In 2020, 1 year after this retreat, actually not even 1 year, just a couple of months, she left her dental office job and began full-time work in church. The second thing that stood out to me was what Pastor Wilbur said. Pastor Wilbur said, it's such a blessing that a 25-year-old this early is already thinking about what her life could become. Pastor Wilbur said, Lord willing, you're going to have a lot of time. And we'll all see, we'll all be witnesses of what God does through you. Since then, it's been a little bit more than 5 years. Some of you have been witnesses of what God has done in these 5 years, no? She completed her master's degree in region. She became a pastor. She went from children ministry to high school and now college and into English. She started preaching. She's an important member of our staff team, and she has ministered to so many of us today. But what I'm so excited about is that's just the beginning. She still has a long way to go. She's only getting started. Or I should say, God is only getting started. If God has done all this in 5 years' time, what about the next 5 years? The third 5 years, fourth 5 years? If God willing, she will retire 65, 70, she's going to have 7 or 8 cycles of 5 years. Turns out, living a life for God is a life that is most fruitful and rewarding. Not just when you see Jesus, but even now. Turns out, to everyone who is faithful, more will be given not just when Jesus returns, but also the now. Because you see, I think this is how God's pattern of testing works. I give you a little bit. You've been faithful, I'll give you a little bit more. I'll give you a little bit more. And you're going to have more and more and more until the day when Jesus comes back and He's going to give you beyond what you can imagine. Sometimes I wonder what responsibilities God would give Pastor Fizz when she sees him. I think God has entrusted her with many things in this life. Definitely a vocal ability, an ability to sing, a desire to perform and act. Her mind is uniquely wired for organization, finding structure in things, and many, many more. And maybe she would be a great heavenly worship planner. She is to put organizations to all the heavenly hymnals, and she would schedule the angels and animals and people to take turns to worship. And obviously herself would be in it. Or maybe there is a heavenly musical theater department telling the stories of God's creation, what He's done, and all that kind of stuff. And she coordinates all of that. She rehearses with them all of that. And she's maybe a drama teacher or an actor, but definitely a performer herself. Or honestly, maybe what God is going to give her, we still haven't seen. She's just gotten started. So who knows? Maybe when she sees Jesus, she will loop all the way back around and manage some dental offices in heaven. What about you? What if you also start today? Not tomorrow, tonight. I'm not saying you have to quit your job to work at the church. That's not what I'm saying. Not everybody is called to that. But what I am saying is, would you take a little bit of that mindset? Live your life today as if you will see God tomorrow. Not do it tomorrow. Live your life today as if you will see God tomorrow. What has God given you today? Why don't you use it? Steward it. Don't hide it. Don't bury it. Don't sleep on it. What would that look like for you if you did that for 5 years? Another 5 years. Some of y'all, you're only 15. You're way ahead of me and Pastor Fizz in the curve. Some of you are 20, a little ahead of me. If you're 25 right now, still a little ahead. If you're 30, we'll run together. But you still have a lot more to go. Doesn't matter what age you are. You still have a couple of cycles of 5 years for God. God willing. And we can all be witnesses of how God works through you, yeah? Maybe I'll play your film in 5 years and I will tell of how God has worked through you. How you've changed, how you've grown. Or maybe, before the 5 years is up, Jesus returns. But you're ready. And what would you do? Maybe you'll be the director of space exploration in the new heaven and new earth. Some of y'all might like that. Maybe you will oversee all the pet groomers of all the animal care centers in heaven. This one you'll like. I know a couple of you will like this. Maybe you'll be the director of the Heavenly Volleyball League. Playing volleyball with the angels. Or maybe you'll be like me. You'll write music for a 17-piece jazz band, jazz worship big band. But can I give you one piece of advice? If you have to copy this out by hand, don't do it tomorrow. Start early. Start preparing it now. Let's all stand. Let's pray together. Tonight, I want to give you a few minutes. Would you just pray to God on a prompt? If for whatever reason your life ended right now, what would God say to you? If for whatever reason your life ends right now, what would God say to you about your life? Why don't you reflect on it and pray to God according to that prompt?